From the City of Angels near the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, are we on the brink of catastrophe? Behold a pale farce. Bill Blunden thinks we are not. Stand by for that. Here's what's happening. A massive and unprecedented assault against al-Qaeda fighters in Yemen appears to be targeting very high-level operatives of the terrorist network. It was not clear who those targets are, but Yemen's government says it has killed dozens of members of al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula in a joint operation with us, the United States. The ongoing push included a Sunday night ambush in which Yemeni special forces killed men believed to be top leaders of the group. They've collected the bodies, and they're performing DNA tests. The South Korean president has likened the actions of the captain and some crew members of that sunken ferry to murder. As police made more arrests and divers continued searching the submerged vessel, the captain of the South Korean ship is already facing a series of criminal charges for his role in last week's sinking, in which at least 87 people have died, 215 others remain missing. Many of them are students and teachers on a field trip from a high school near Seoul, South Korea. Chinese relatives of missing Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 passengers wept, begged, then cursed a Malaysian diplomat in Beijing. They went to a meeting at a hotel there expecting a long-awaited briefing from Malaysian technical experts, but erupted in anger when the diplomat announced a change in plans. There simply will be no briefing, he said. And the people went ballistic. James Sanders, of course, an investigative journalist, author of the downing of TWA Flight 800, and he has been with us since this March 8th tragedy. Jim, as you said last week, the longer this goes, the worse it gets. I don't think they're going to find this plane.
Well, they're certainly not going to find it where they're looking. I think they're well under a 1% chance. But, you know, the Yemeni operation is going down. That's just north of Somalia. Mm-hmm. It's kind of in the Badlands area the plane was last seen flying toward. And if America put all of its assets in that area, as you know that it had to do to see if the plane was there, a natural byproduct of that, because you have missiles in the area, you have satellites in the area, you have the ability to take out the plane and anybody involved in it. Yeah. So the byproduct is, whether the plane was there or not, you spot all these bad guys and you start taking them out. The timing's just right what it would take, you know, to move all these assets in and to get things taken care of. I think that's a pretty good hint that the American intelligence at least suspected that the plane was over there in the Somali
Interesting
Yemen area.
Take, Jim. You're the first person to come up with that theory. And you know what? It might have some very strong possibilities there.
Yeah, well, I'm hiding and watching, you know, May 2nd's the big date. If that plane is not neutralized before then, it will be used. If it's neutralized and they have the ability to get people in there and get some portions of it to go throw it in the water so somebody can say, Eureka, we found it, over by Australia and go home, they'll do that, I would imagine.
And James, explain that May 2nd date again.
Okay, that's the third anniversary of bin Laden being taken out by American forces.
Okay.
That would be the logical date that if they have a 777, they're going to use the 777.
All right, my friend. Thank you, Jim. We'll continue talking with you. Jim's website, of course, part of our Twitter feed at coasttocoastam.com. Aviation and security experts are at a loss to explain how a 16-year-old boy from Santa Clara, California, managed to scale a fence at a San Jose International Airport before surviving a five-hour flight to Maui in the wheel well of a Hawaiian Airlines jet. Authorities said the boy apparently hopped an 8-foot fence topped with barbed wire at the San Jose airport while it was still dark on Sunday morning. Surveillance video showed an unidentified person walking toward a Hawaiian Airlines Boeing 767 on the tarmac. Flight 45 took off at 7:55 a.m., no one realizing that the boy had snuck into the plane's wheel well. The boy was apparently unconscious for the duration of the 2,400-mile flight at a high altitude, extremely cold temperatures. It's a miracle he didn't die. After the plane landed at the airport in Maui, he remained unconscious for about an hour before he thawed out and emerged from the wheel well. Personnel noticed him on the ramp. Unbelievable story. The incidence of the most serious skin cancer in Great Britain is now five times higher than it was in the 1970s. Cancer research statistics there show that more than 13,000 people have developed malignant melanoma each year, compared with just around 1,800 in the mid-1970s. It says the rise is partly due to the rising popularity of holidays to Europe from the late 60s, and sunbed use, they say, has also fueled the increase. Be careful. The streaming video company Netflix says that it plans to increase subscription prices for new customers by $1 or $2 a month within the next few months. Existing subscribers, they say, will be able to continue at the current rate for a generous time period. Biofuels made from the leftovers of harvested corn plants are worse than gasoline for global warming in the short term, according to a study, challenging the Obama administration's conclusions that they are a much cleaner oil alternative and will help combat climate change. A $500,000 study paid for by the federal government in the peer-reviewed journal Nature Climate Change concludes that biofuels made with corn residue increase and release 7% more greenhouse gases in the early years compared with conventional gasoline. While biofuels are better in the long run, the study says they won't meet a new standard set in a 2007 energy law to qualify as a renewable fuel. Well, David Bloom, he's the one, he's the expert, he's the author of the best-selling Alcohol Can Be a Gas. David, I got to get your reaction to this story.
Well, you know, the American Petroleum Institute has been manipulating our view of fuel for darn near 70 years, and this is nothing new. The study doesn't talk about alcohol the way it's made today, which is from starch or sugar. In other words, cornstarch or many, many other things. They're talking about pie-in-the-sky cellulosic ethanol, which the oil companies sold us that bill of goods in order to distract from farmers making fuel from any number of common crops. The story went, well, it's food versus fuel. You have to make it out of plant fiber or cellulose to be ethically correct. But that was a red herring. That was meant to take us off in a very difficult direction, which delays the implementation of alcohol fuel around the country. When they told us food versus fuel, 40% of the corn is now, as they say, diverted into ethanol plants. But did you see the price of food double? Did you see shortages of meat? No. And the reason is they don't tell the whole truth, because out of the alcohol plant comes both alcohol and animal feed. The cellulosic process is supposed to avoid all this messy farmer relationships and just have us grow hay or switchgrass to make alcohol. The real solution is for letting farmers do what they do best, which is grow crops we understand to grow, to produce starch or sugar, and we can easily replace the entire country's need for fossil fuel. And the oil companies have just lost their Supreme Court lawsuit challenging the ability of states to demand that higher amounts of alcohol go in the gas. The oil companies are running scared, and this is a distraction from the new high prices you see across the United States.
You are probably right on, David Bloom. Thank you so much. Researchers, by the way, have developed a new technique, listen to this, to cause rain and lightning by firing a laser at the clouds. Now, you know they've been doing this for a long time if they're announcing it now. The technique uses a double laser to stimulate particles within a cloud. The technique, they say, could one day be used to create rainstorms and even lightning on command. We told you about this 10 years ago. Earth is approaching a stream of debris from the ancient comet Thacher, source of the annual Lyrid meteor shower. Let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Now, for a moment, I thought this might be the Lemonids, but it's not. This is the Lyrid meteor shower, Stephen.
Absolutely, George, and it's good to be with you as always. But talking about the Lyrid meteor shower, We're looking now, if you look into the northeastern part of the sky across the country, the farther east you are, the higher this bright star Vega, the namesake area of where the meteors are coming out, observers, George, with clear skies should see well over 10, maybe 50 meteors per hour. And remember, these are all objects moving through space at over 100,000 miles an hour when they hit the Earth's atmosphere. All this on the heels of last week's wonderful total lunar eclipse. So we have so many objects to look for. But in a short synopsis, George, here's what I could recommend for all of our coast listeners.
Okay.
Look to the northeast. When you see the bright star Vega, as I'm looking at it here from Phoenix, Gulf, it's 27 light years away. That's the area, in the simplest way I can say it, that's the radiant of the Lyrid meteor shower. And the longer you stay out or up until early morning hours, like we all love to listen to Coast, yes, you can play and follow along. And probably, my prediction is, at least about 20 per hour. All debris, as you mentioned, George, from Comet Thatcher, an ancient comet, all debris from comets. This is the source of meteors. And finally, just something for the aviation fans of our Dr. Sky side, new updates on our aviation site, which is photorecon.net. For all of you out there that just love all the stuff, not only astronomy, space, but aviation and weather too, George.
You got it. And track Dr. Sky at drsky.com, drsky.com. Well, you know what? Here's a story that'll tell you exactly what love really is all about. An Ohio couple who met as teenagers and were married for 70 years, almost never sleeping apart, died from natural causes within a span of 15 hours. The woman, Helen, she died first, and then her husband passed away the next day. How about that? In a moment, Nurse Joyce Riley joins me. We will be talking about the record suicides in our military and other issues next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. This hour we're going to spend with Nurse Joyce Riley about a very important subject. Here's an example. Suicides among U.S. Special Operations Forces, including the elite Navy SEALs and Army Rangers, are at record levels, according to U.S. military officials, citing the effects of more than a decade of what they say hard combat. But what else is going on? A number of military coming down with PTSD, toxic combinations of antidepressants. Joyce Riley, of course, has been watching this for a long, long time. And Joyce, since we've been talking about this for so many years, it hasn't gotten any better, has it?
It's gotten much worse. In fact, and thank you for the opportunity, George, we are waiting right now for an onslaught of suicides that are going to be hitting. It is so bad. I don't think people have any understanding of what that 22 suicides means a day and how many people that affects. It is so important to realize that not only, and I went back and studied that that quote-unquote study that was done on 22 suicides a day, mm-hmm. and I was shocked to find out that there are a whole lot of what are called non-lethal and non-fatal events that take place also. In fact, in 2011, there were 16,000 a month, which comes to about 53 a day of non-lethal or non-suicide, effective suicides in essence. So that brings the total to, you know, like 70 or 80 a day, which is shocking, absolutely startling. Why are all these people committing suicide? Well, we've got to go back and look at what we've talked about over the past 10 years, and that is that the U.S. military decided back in about the late or mid-1990s to start medicating the troops that came back from Gulf War I, regardless of what was wrong with them. I don't care if you had a bladder infection. I don't care if you had a bad back. You were given a Psych-Eval first. Now, the military's been strongly utilizing psychiatry since about World War II and gotten worse over the years. And with this, what we're seeing now is that nearly 80% of the troops are either offered or placed on one of these psychiatric drugs. Gosh. So the linkage of the psychiatric drug with the ailments just doesn't make any sense. You come in for a bad back and you get Seroquel, which, by the way, is called Seroquel, but in the military they call it Seroquel because of the number of cardiac deaths that occur as a result of it. So what we're seeing is between the number of suicides a day and the non-lethal suicides a day, in other words, the attempts at suicide, huge numbers we've never seen before. But if people do not link that and realize that it is related to the drugs or related to the number of people that are relegated into the psychiatric category, then they don't understand where this is coming from, because it's not PTSD necessarily, because there is no objective way to diagnose PTSD. And a lot of this information I was shocked at. I would like to say I did this, but I didn't, and I have no relationship to this, but there is a documentary called The Hidden Enemy, Inside Psychiatry's Covert Agenda, and I am going to tell you, it turned me upside down in the things that I learned. It made me realize how much worse this problem is than we had ever imagined.
It's huge. Huge.
With the numbers of people that are committing suicide, and get this, not only the adults, but we all know that children have a tough time in the military. Their dads are gone. Their moms are gone. They miss them. They're so sad. They don't want them to be gone. They're afraid they're going to die. So what happens is the mothers dutifully or the fathers dutifully take them to counseling or to the psychiatrist. And in 2008 alone, now this has increased over the years, but children of deployed veterans, there were 2 million visits for the children. And get this, 91% of all of those were placed on a psychiatric drug.
Gosh.
Of children.
Joyce, during World War II, I assume they did not prescribe nearly the amount of drugs that they're doing now. So I assume the suicide rate was lower?
It was much lower, much, much lower. They didn't even have these kinds of drugs that they were utilizing. The more that they met, this is, goes right coincides. It coincides with the number of medications that are given, the number of prescriptions that are given, and the numbers of deaths and the number of suicides. Here's another thing that I found out from that study that was done, is that a majority of the troops that committed suicide did it 1 month after going to the VA. Now, that's shocking, because that means that they were probably placed on a drug at the VA, and then they committed suicide a month later. Now, let's talk about active duty people. Now they are being given these drugs prior to deploying, at least 30%. We know 30%, and a lot of the nurses say it's a lot higher than that. So they, before deployment, and they're even told that if you don't take the drugs, you don't deploy. They put them on these drugs, these SSRI drugs, which increase violence, increase suicidality, increase the tendency for homicidal behavior. And these are the things that you don't want in a group of people. You want to be able to manage a gun, handle themselves appropriately in another country, and bring democracy. But what happens is these troops are given 6 months prior to deploying of these drugs. They need to be monitored every week when they're on these drugs initially, but they're not monitored at all. They're just placed on the drugs, and they're sent to fight a war. They're given 6 months worth. Now, some of the suicides and some of the homicides and overdoses, and a lot of these that should be considered suicides or should be considered deaths related to the drugs, are really from the poisonings and the overdoses, unintentional overdoses, because some of these troops, and understand these drugs should never be given in combination. They've never been tested in combination. But some of these troops are given as many as 24 of these drugs. So what we're seeing at Fort Hood, we're going to be seeing again.
All over the place.
There's no question.
And we see what's happening in schools, Joyce, with over-medicated kids.
Without a doubt. But this is by design. There is no way that the military says, gee, we had no idea what's going on with these troops. They know it. But the pharmaceutical companies are so strong in what they are able to do with the military. You know, the military in World War II decided that they wanted to have, they wanted to invite the psychological or the pharmaceutical companies in, and they wanted to be able to have a kind of a closed group to where anything that happened that really wasn't all that good could be considered classified and nobody would ever know about it. They would have an unlimited number of subjects and an unlimited number of dollars to work with. So here comes the pharmaceutical companies. And now we've got these troops taking their lives, their families' lives. Now, the suicide...
Hold on for a sec, Joyce. We're going to hit the break. We'll come back with more. We'll take some phone calls as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Nurse Joyce Riley with us. Joyce, why do you think they're over-medicating? Some big deal with a pharmaceutical company or what?
I think that can be one part of it. But I think also that if they can relegate their injuries, their problems, their whatever to some kind of mental problem, then they don't have to deal with it. In other words, the very fact that the military might be creating these problems vis-a-vis the whatever, chemicals, biologicals during the first Gulf War, depleted uranium more so during the second Gulf War, because it removes liability. And I've seen ridiculous cases where they take a person that's got an obvious organic injury, obvious problem, and they relegate them to the PTSD category just so they can remove them from any kind of responsibility. That also has to do with the pensions. It also has to do with compensation. But if we take those suicides that we were talking about and the attempted suicides, which comes to about 75 a day, gosh, you have to ask the question, where would we allow that to happen anywhere? If we were at war in Somalia and 75 of our troops were dying a day, we wouldn't tolerate that. We would do something about it. But in this case, what we're seeing here is the military is not only tolerating it, but doing more of it by over-medicating these people. And I would encourage any military person especially to go to CCHR.org. That video is there available. You can see it there. But the video is going to help you understand how dramatic and how serious this problem is. CCHR.org did an amazing job of doing this video. I wish everybody could see it that's getting ready to join the military. Every parent could see it. Because just like with Specialist Leon at Fort Hood, you know, they admitted that he was on Ambien, but that was it. And they said that because of, you know, legal reasons, they couldn't tell the other drugs. Well, why can you tell one drug and not others? And yet Ambien has been known for people to sleep eat, sleep That's drive, right. sleep have sex. What's wrong with sleep killing or sleep suicide? So they're not understanding, or people are not understanding just how serious the drugs are, especially in combination. And by the way, of the PTSD-labeled people, 40% of them never saw combat. So how does one explain they've got post-traumatic stress disorder from a war when they didn't see combat?
Good point.
And I'm not saying that it doesn't exist, and I'm not saying it's not real, but they also don't want people to know about the toxic burn pits. They don't want people to know about what happened in the Gulf War, one, and the vaccines, and they don't want them to know what happened with respect to depleted uranium for sure in Gulf War II. So listen to this. This is amazing to me. In comparison to the civilian population, the military uses 30 times more of these drugs than the civilian population.
Gosh.
Unbelievable.
It's crazy.
And they know what they're doing. And these troops who get on them can't get off because they're addictive. So when they get on the drugs, and I want to make this very clear to any listener out there that is taking these drugs, do not go off of a cold turkey. You can't. You get addicted to it. And it will increase your symptoms if you go off of it. And do not do that unless you have a good physician who knows what he's doing.
Yeah, but chances are, Joyce, and I agree with you, it's the physician who probably prescribed it in the first place.
And you know what? It's not a physician. It's usually a psychiatric aide. It's a psychiatric intern. It's a nurse who happens to be seeing people in clinic. It's wrong what they're doing because there is no follow-up. So they put them on the drugs. Let's say they put them on Zoloft or Seroquel or whatever. They put them on, let's say, one of the drugs. Then they come back later and they say, I feel just as horrible. I don't feel any better because maybe they had an organic problem that wasn't taken care of. And so they say, well, let me add one more. And then let me add one more. And like I said, I've known some of these people that were on 24 of these drugs. They were walking zombies. You could not create a killer, George, any better than what they're doing right now. You could not create a killer. There's more. If you just do a search engine on military suicides, military homicides,
it's huge.
You're not going to believe what you see. Now, the military knows this. They're not stupid. I'm not the first one to say this, obviously. And this documentary, The Hidden Enemy, oh, my goodness, it will turn your life upside down once you realize what the military is doing to the people. And then they say, oh, that horrible military person, they just went crazy and killed people. No, the drugs kill people. The drugs create that. And every person I visited in prison, in jail, every military person I visited because of a capital offense, has all told me the same thing. It was those drugs. And I don't even remember doing it because of the amnesia, the depersonalization that occurs. So I just want to say to the veterans, don't commit suicide. Don't give up. Don't think that there is no hope, because there are doctors that understand this. And if you see that documentary, The Hidden Enemy, you are going to have an understanding that it's not you most of the times. It's the drugs acting within you.
Let's take some calls here, Joyce, for you for the time we've got left. Dave in Indianapolis, Indiana, east of the Rockies. Hi, David. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yeah, my son has served two tours of Afghanistan and a tour of Iraq, and he has PTSD. But he says him and everyone in his unit that suffers from PTSD, he's one of those bomb poker type people, but he says they have to be off their meds for 4 months before they can get deployed again.
I don't know about that. I've not heard that at all, because mostly when you get on those drugs, you can't get off. And I've heard all kinds of stories about how they just maintain them. So I don't know. I mean, that to me would not be medically safe to bring them off of those drugs either. But they are deploying them with the drugs, so I can't understand why they would have that, why they would say that.
You know, whose idea do you think it was, Joyce? Some individual to over-medicate these troops? I mean, some one person you think made some kind of edict?
Well, I think there is a desire within the... Remember, in Gulf War I, they didn't want anybody to know there was a Gulf War illness, and this turned out to be obviously true, everything I said. But they made a decision then to hide the Gulf War illness, to not tell the truth to the public. That was a DOD decision. And so the same thing has happened now, because when I learned in 1998, I learned from all the troops that I had interviewed, and I mean, there were hundreds of them, 80% of them had either been placed on or offered Prozac. Now, that means that we sent 80% of the head cases to fight a war over in Iraq? I don't think so. So there was a conscious decision. Some of the generals, that are involved in this also have very close relationships with pharmaceutical companies. And it's very scary because they're the ones promoting them. For instance, the Seroquel drug is not safe at all, and it has been found to not be even effective for PTSD, yet one of the generals, I could give her name, but one of the generals is now recommending that it be given to them. Now, they are also doing these psychological evaluations, and by the way, some of them are even created by Pfizer, by the pharmaceutical companies. So, I mean, it's just so inbred that, you know, and I'll even mention her name, Dr. Elspeth Cameron Ritchie. She was formerly the top psychiatrist in the U.S. Army, and when she was serving in the Army, she praised that drug, the antipsychotic Seroquel, for being so useful for the treatment of anxiety, which it is not, and causes sudden cardiac death. And she also was funded by two drug companies in doing this. So there is an inbred situation here that needs to be cleaned up.
All right, Joyce, let's take some more calls here for you. Deborah, Inglewood, Colorado. And Deborah's a first-time caller for us. Hi, Deborah. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is related to why aren't they considering therapies such as EMDR and biofeedback rather than over-medicating?
Well, it's a good question, and that's what a normal, sane person would ask. But unfortunately, there's so many people that have ended up with problems as a result of the first and the second Gulf War. About 1 million people are sick, and they don't have the manpower, nor do they have the desire to treat them. So they relegate them to seeing some psychiatric intern who gives them the drugs and tells them that's the answer to your problem. There are something like 890,000 calls received by veterans' hotlines. There's no way they can possibly deal with all these people and take care of their problems. Now, their problems are related to perhaps, number one, PTSD, real, from what they did over there, that they're sorry that they did it. And then number two, the fact that they got involved in a military doing things that perhaps, was not what the military was for. And then, of course, getting involved in taking the drugs. And then they have a real problem. And they just can't get over it. And that leads to the suicide ideation or the homicidal ideation. And then that leads to them, unfortunately, not being taken care of by the VA. And thus, you know, the fact that I gave the statement that after 1 month of being at the VA is when they commit suicide, and that's probably because of the drugs they were placed on. It's too expensive, it takes too much time, and it would take too many therapists to do the right thing by these troops. So they just really kick him to the side of the curb, and that's the sad part.
I would guess, Joyce, that some of the military folks must come to you emotionally distraught, crying, everything, don't they?
Oh, it's unbelievable. You know, like I said, they're sorry for what they did. They didn't know what they were getting involved in. They came back a basket case. They can't get any better in doing anything at all. They try to exercise. They try to go to church. They try everything. But if they're on these drugs, the drugs take over, and the drugs create, like this guy Leon, the specialist Leon at Fort Hood. No one had a negative thing to say about him. And that's the tragedy, George, is most of these people are really incredible guys and women that do this, that either kill themselves or someone else. They're amazing people. There's never anything negative said about them. And they go off and just kill. No motive. And that's where we need to start asking, what's the motive? And if there is no motive, then let's look at the drugs. And then by law, they need to do a forensic autopsy and let us know what drugs these people are on.
Charlie in Tacoma, Washington, thanks for calling. Charlie, you're on the air with us, and welcome to Coast to Coast.
Thank you for accepting my call. I wanted to make a statement and then ask a question. I live right outside Fort Lewis, so I see a lot of depression in the military. Also in 1974, my father committed suicide for this disorder before it was ever named. I was 9 years old, and what's happening with the children and what has happened with the children for counseling is not up to par. They make these children relive their parents' suicide over and over and over again, and then society tells them they went to hell because of religion. So my question is, what can we do for the children?
I wish I knew the answer. I think part of it is keeping them out of the psychiatric system in the military. Because like I said, 91% of them, if you take your child into the military and see a psychiatrist, 91% of those children are now coming out medicated. And that is not the place to begin. These children have a problem. These children have an issue. It needs to be dealt with in an appropriate fashion, not just placing them on drugs. So I don't have all the answers as to the treatment. I want to call attention to the problem and the very fact that psychiatry is getting away with the use of these drugs when you cannot. There's no way to objectively find a diagnosis on most of these psychiatric illnesses. And we need to stop the medication and start the real treatment.
Well, that's the only way to do it, Joyce. You're absolutely right. East of the Rockies, Nita in Tennessee. Good morning, Nita.
Hi.
Hi there.
I've been waiting so long to get through on a show like this. I've been treated for severe depression since the 70s. And the only person who should prescribe psychotropic drugs is a psychiatrist, not a family doctor, not anybody else.
I agree with that. And as a matter of fact, Dr. Peter Bregan, who is a psychiatrist, will tell you, don't take it.
Right. And every psychiatrist I've ever had, I have to see a therapist, a counselor, a talk therapist. I even saw a psychologist one time. Or they don't treat me. It's not like someone gives me a prescription of drugs and I go back in 90 days for a refill and there's nothing in between. I have to see a therapist.
Yeah, I would believe that. So what does somebody like that, Joyce, what does she do?
Well, she has to see a therapist. If she needs to be on these drugs and if they're working for her, that's one issue. But we're talking about people here who are placed on these drugs who don't have depression, who have another problem. We're talking about the blanket use of these drugs by the pharmaceutical company. So I think we're talking about apples and oranges here. I mean, she needs to see her therapist and she needs to go through the system if that's what she chooses to do. But in the military, my issue is you're placing children on these drugs, you're placing military people on these drugs, handing them a weapon to go out and then become even more aggressive.
Yeah.
And then they do the kinds of things like the gentleman that climbed over the walls, went and burned up two families, came back, and he was on a drug called Larium. you know, we need to look at what these drugs are doing to really nice people.
And if they're on these drugs for a long time, do they seem to get even worse?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, they become so addicted. And plus, it costs about $1.5 million per military person to place them on these drugs for a lifetime. So they get on more and more and more, and in many cases, they end up in cardiac deaths that are not registered as suicides. And I think, George, if we were to know the truth, it would probably, if all of the suicides and all the homicides and all the poisonings were put together, it would probably be more close to 100 per day. And yet, this is like a national emergency. This is more important than a lot of things. You know, CNN could have followed this for the last 45 days instead of looking for a plane that they're not going to find. You know, they could have been finding out what is the problem with all these suicides and homicides that they like to cover, because these people are killing their families. All I can say is, if you're on the drugs, know what you're doing to get off of them. Do some research. If you're not on them, know what you're doing if you ever get on them, because you may never be able to get off.
Now, let's get a quick call out of Gary in Sylmar, California. Hey, Gary, go ahead.
Hey, good evening. Good evening. How are you?
Good, Gary. Thank you.
I would like to reiterate some of the things that the nurse has said, but I would like to preface it by saying that combat is not a natural thing. We are all taught either socially or theologically, thou shalt not kill. Then they give you a weapon and tell you to kill. Then you come back to say, well, give us the weapon and go live your life. But as the nurse has said, the first thing that they want to do is put you on medication. And as a caller ahead of me mentioned, they're not using EMDR. They're not using acupuncture. So they're just, as she said, they're just throwing us to the curb and watching us die.
Quick reaction, Joyce, before the clock gets us.
You're so correct. You know, 40% of those troops don't even see combat. So how can you say it's PTSD? War is ugly. War is horrible. You know, I served in the military, but I don't know that I would want to be serving in the mission today. I simply want these troops to know there's hope for them. Don't give up, and don't think that you can never get off those drugs, because there are some special forces that I've talked to that are doing amazing today. And please go to cchr.org, watch that video, and it'll give you a lot of hope, I can assure you.
Joyce, let's also give us a few of your websites.
You can go to GulfWarVets.com. You can go to ThePowerHour.com and check out the information there, BeyondTreason.com. And I will give a free copy of Beyond Treason to any veteran from the Gulf War to understand why you're sick from the Gulf War also. Please do your homework. There's people that care out there. It's hard to find, I know, but there are people that care.
Joyce, thanks again for being on the program. Always appreciate the information that you bring to us. Up next, behold a pale farce, cyber war, threat inflation, the malware industrial complex. Bill Blunden joins us next on Coast to Coast AM.